Okay, I want to read a sutta from the Samyutta Nikaya. This is 22.43, and the title is With Yourselves as an Island. At Sawati, bhikkhus, dwell with yourselves as an island, with yourselves as a refuge, with no other refuge, with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge, with no other refuge. When you dwell with yourselves as an island, with yourselves as a refuge, with no other refuge, with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge, with no other refuge, the basis itself should be investigated thus. From what are sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair born? How are they produced? And bhikkhus, from what are sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair born? How are they produced? Here, bhikkhus, the uninstructed worldling, who is not a seer of the noble ones, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who is not a seer of superior persons, and is not unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. That form of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of form, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. He regards self as feeling. And then it repeats the same pattern where feeling could be taken to have self or possessing self, etc. Or self possesses feeling. And likewise, we go through the rest of the five aggregates. Perception could be seen as self. Volitional formations could be seen as self. Consciousness could be seen as self. Okay, or self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. That consciousness of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of consciousness, there arise in him sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. But, bhikkhus, when one has understood the impermanence of form, its change, fading away, and cessation, and when one sees as it really is with correct wisdom thus, in the past and also now, all form are impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, then sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair are abandoned. With their abandonment, one does not become agitated. Being unagitated, he dwells happily. A bhikkhu who dwells happily is said to be quenched in that respect. When one has understood the impermanence of feeling, and likewise the rest of the five aggregates of perception, of volitional formations, of consciousness, its change, fading away and cessation, and when one sees it as it really is with correct wisdom thus, in the past and also now, all consciousness is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change. Then sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair are abandoned. With their abandonment, one does not become agitated. Being unagitated, one dwells happily. A bhikkhu who dwells happily is said to be quenched in that respect. Okay, so I want to share a story as to why I picked this sutta. I've been asking myself the question for a while now. When I look in the teachings of the Buddha, in the early Buddhist texts, where do we find some sort of a concept like self-esteem? Self-esteem. Would everybody know this term? Yeah, self-esteem. It means like believing in yourself, It's like a healthy psychological regard for oneself. It's not unhealthy. It's not too much. It's not egotistical, but it's just sort of one is okay with oneself. Okay? As opposed to like feeling inadequate or low self-esteem, feeling depressed or feeling one is not good enough, one is not worthy, etc. Okay? And I asked on the forum, hey, is there any concept like self-esteem? We have this forum amongst all the monks here. Usually there's some Pali concept, you know, some Pali term for everything, for every such concept. But this is one concept where I guess in ancient Jambudipa, there was no word for this. There was no concept for this. This was not a thing. It was not an idea. It was not you could not say it. You could not express it. You could not speak of it. It is not there. Okay? Now, there are many similar concepts. There are many concepts that kind of like halfway cover it. Okay? There are many concepts which kind of like almost are self-esteem, but it's not the same thing. By the way, if you want to ask the hardest question in Buddhism to any monk you meet in the future, ask, what did the Buddha teach about self-esteem? That's the hardest question of them all. And you'll get some very interesting answers, and it'll be different every time because they must provide all these things which are close but not quite self-esteem. Okay? You're going to hear a bunch of answers, and they're going to be good too. Now, there's this one monk that I met back in Sri Lanka that I've stayed in touch with. And he's a good Pali scholar, just like the monks here. So I asked him this question. Hey, what is there for like self-esteem in the suttas? So he pointed me at this sutta that I just read out for you. And a term which does come close, this is one of the terms that comes close, is... if we looked at the Pali for this, dwell with yourselves as an island. Dwell with yourselves as an island. The Pali that came from is, it's attadipa, attadipa. So atta is self. Now, usually whenever self is talked about, atta, it's in the context of like anatta, okay, like not self, okay? Buddhism would have us let go of this sense of self and have this very depersonalized view of everything. It's a very high Dhamma to, you know, be very impersonal when you see the world and even have this impersonal sense towards oneself. Okay. So atta here means self, and then dipa. Sometimes atta means different things in different contexts. Okay. It doesn't just have one context, one meaning. But this other word, dipa is like island, okay? Dipa is a very... okay, this is why we need Pali scholars, because this is like a... The word means a lot. There's a lot happening in this word dipa. Okay, there's several definitions. Okay, if you look this word up, it could mean an island, but it also means like just land whatsoever. It also means it could mean an entire continent. Okay, like think of like Australia. That would be a dipa. Okay, it's a whole continent. But it also has a general meaning of like a place of safety, a refuge, a support, help whatsoever, or solid ground. I really like this this is kind of a phrase in English. It doesn't just mean the earth under our feet being solid. It's more of an abstract concept of like, it is good enough, it is acceptable, it is reliable, it is trustworthy, it is adequate. That's solid ground. And it can be generally applied. Okay, like let's say this nice new Toyota Fortuna vehicle we have. That's, you know, Toyotas are that's a good brand, okay? So maybe if I'm talking to some other monk, none of the lay people are looking, I'm like, that's a really solid vehicle. Solid means good, like sturdy, tough, reliable, dependable. It's solid, okay? It isn't just, you know, firm when we touch it. It isn't just made of metal. I'm not referring to the fact that it's metal. I'm referring to its reliability, okay? So this word dīpa has this sense of solid ground, like, you know, yeah. So that's why, you know, it also means refuge, place of safety, support. Okay, so atta dīpa. So it's like self, you know, support, self refuge, self place of safety. Okay, so this is pretty close to self-esteem. I actually like this answer the best that this monk friend gave me. Yeah, now atta dīpa taken together has its own meaning. Self-reliant, independent. It literally means own island, meaning like an island unto itself. Okay? So self-reliant and independent. Yeah, so I'll just make a couple last points. The sutta does go on to mention a couple times, like, oh, you know, bhikkhus should go see, you know, visit superior persons, you know, perhaps senior monks, senior nuns, senior monastics who are skilled and disciplined in the Dhamma. You know, it sort of cautions, okay, don't be so independent you never go see any, you know, senior monks and wise people, right? And it also cautions, too, a little bit later on. It's mentioning some anatta-like teachings, perhaps to caution us, you know, don't take yourself so seriously and so don't get egotistical. Don't take it too far. Okay? Yeah. Okay. There is the reason I'm taking more of an interest in this self-esteem thing is all the psychologists right now are seeing a lot of like loss of mental health because of the pandemic. Everybody, you know, had to do the lockdown thing and we socialized a lot less. And there is a measurable drop in mental health now. Like all the psychologists when they do their tests and surveys and whatnot. Yeah. And one of the worst causes, apparently, of this loss of self-esteem, it is social media. And they even did a study of which social media are the worst ones for your mental health. Like, if you wanted to wreck your mental health the worst, which social media network would you go to? The answer apparently is Instagram. Instagram is the worst. Yeah, and what seems to be happening is everybody posts their photos on there, and you know that sounds pretty innocent. That shouldn't be evil. What's wrong with photos, right? And most people, I think, they will touch up the photos. It's very easy to touch up the photos, okay? You know, like maybe there's things about us that we don't think are so beautiful and we can touch it up. You know, we can remove the acne and the wrinkles, and you know, we can make ourselves a little taller. We can stretch out our bodies a little taller if we want to be a little taller. This kind of thing. So everybody can kind of candy up these pictures, and then this is a term I it's like candy. It's like sprinkling sweet candy on the picture, you know. And then they upload the pictures. And then when you look at these pictures, oh, look, everybody has such a beautiful life. They have beautiful friends. They have so much fun. Look at them. They're smiling and they're, you know, they have parties and nobody invites me to their party. And look at this. They have sports cars and they have, you know, they have private jets. And I don't have a sports car or private jet. So everybody kind of compares their self on there to everybody else, and they find, well, I'm a loser compared to everyone else on here. I'm a loser. I don't have anywhere this much fun, you know. I don't smile this much. So when we compare ourselves to everybody on there, we end up looking, you know, not as good. And so I think this can lead to low self-esteem. It is in that comparing. That's where the trouble is. And that's something that's in our nature as humans, is we compare ourselves a lot to everyone else. How are we doing? How are we doing? And, so this Instagram blows it out of proportion. Okay. It doesn't present an accurate, realistic picture of the world. Even though it should just be a bunch of photos. But it turns into this big kind of popularity contest. It's a big popularity contest, yeah. Okay, anyway. I think I've said enough for one day. Are there any questions? Yeah, well, this is worth a conversation. It's a very the comments are, sometimes it will lift people's self-esteem. Sometimes it's good. So why, you know, can we really say it's all bad? Well, the net effect would be a negative one. Like, just statistically, demographically, you know, just looked at broadly. I would suggest that in order to make this as healthy as possible, when we use these kind of things online, it is best to just share with the people you know in real life, not just to the whole rest of the world, okay? To have this big popularity contest with the rest of the world, that's a contest we're very likely going to lose, because it's, you know what I mean? No matter how rich I am or beautiful or whatever, compared to the rest of the world, there's tons of other people more rich, more beautiful, more better. You know what I mean? Yeah, like when we opened it up to the whole world, that was not a smart move. Because the popularity contest has so many more competitors in it. It's like a world competition. But if it is limited more so to your family, your friends, you know, the Buddhist community you're in, maybe your community, let's say Taiping, you know what I mean? The more local you keep that, then it's more realistic. It's more, it's less of a big world competition. It's more of like the people you actually know, the people you might actually visit, talk to, you know, go for coffee with, eat a meal with. It's kind of kept more close to real life. Okay? So I suggest when possible, pick these sorts of online technologies which are aligned to the boundaries of real world groups you're actually part of. And it's kind of private. It's more private to those communities. It is aligned to those communities. Okay? It isn't just a wide open world thing. Yeah. I feel that's the way to make it more real and more realistic and more kind of grounded. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. Well, placing limits on it is surprisingly hard. Yes, of course, I agree. We should place limits on it. It is surprisingly hard to do that, though. However you try to place a limit, there's always one or more ways to get around the limit. Okay, so I personally looked into like how to only have online access for, let's say, 1 hour a day. And how do you do that in a Wi-Fi router? How do you get the Wi-Fi router? It only allows internet access 1 hour a day. How do you do that? So I learned how to do that. But then when I talked to other people, they're like, okay, but if you have like children, you're trying to keep them within that 1 hour, they'll just go to their friend's house. They'll use their friend's internet. Or they'll have a SIM card in their phone. They'll just use the SIM card. They won't use your Wi-Fi. Or they'll use their internet at school. It is surprisingly hard to place limits that they cannot find a way around. Yeah. And it seems that the most effective strategies are one where you get everybody to agree from the beginning about the principles you would like to live up to. And I suggest principles of like, what are the real world groups you're part of? Like family, community, you know, Buddhist groups, you know, your people you go to school with, whatever. Those are real world groups. Can you have like forums? Can you have your own little photo sharing thing or whatever? Have all these things like Instagram or Facebook or whatever, but it's a private one and it's aligned to the boundaries of the groups you are part of in real life. So the people you see in there, they're not just random people out there you've never met and you never are going to meet. Okay. They're not random people. No, they're the real people, you know. Okay. Like the people in there are real people in your real life and it's more private. And you, it might be a little more annoying because you have a bunch of accounts. Okay, you have an account for your Buddhist group. You have an account for the Taiping group. You have an account for the biking group you're part of. Like, you have more accounts and that's annoying. You know, it's like, well, before I just only needed Facebook and Instagram and that got me everywhere I wanted to go. So this solution implies you're going to need more accounts, and you're going to need more geeky people in your life who set these forms up just for your organization. It's just more small scale, and you're going to live without a few conveniences too. Maybe it doesn't have AI in it, or it doesn't have some fancy features in it that the big networks have, but it has all the basics. So yeah, if people can live without some of the fanciest features, but all the basics are there, you know, text is there, pictures are there, voice is there, video is there, like the basics, if you can do that much, and then just be content. Yeah. Anyway, that to me, that's my best guess as to an answer. But it is an extremely hard to solve problem. It's just about impossible. It's just one notch away from impossible. It's so hard. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, well, I'll just conclude then. Thank you for your patience.